this show this week is actually a recording of a live event that we recorded with Cisco as part of our virtual symposium series. The virtual symposium is intended to be a group of, well, you know, people who we know from our online presences, bloggers, Twitter, social media, join us on the podcast and get together to discuss a specific group of topics in such a way that we can tackle them in long form. There's things you can't do in blog posts that you really can do in other forms. So this show is sponsored by Cisco to talk about network programmability in the light of, you know, recent advances at Cisco Live, where Cisco laid out their software-defined networking strategy, supported it with the 1PK API announcement. What we wanted to discuss was how network programmability would affect us in our daily lives. What does this mean, and what sort of uses can we make of it? Therefore, this discussion has people like myself, Ivan Pepelniak, joining us to put in his opinion, clear and loud. Also, Stephen Foskett is with it to give us an out-of-towner sort of a view. And we are additionally joined this week by Brad Casemore and also Brent Salisbury. So thanks for them for joining us. And also note that this show was recorded from WebEx, and that's why the audio quality is lower than we would normally. I apologize for that. There's not much I can do. Thanks. Enjoy the show.
Joining us, this is Omar Sultan from Cisco, and this is the third of our virtual symposium sessions. And I think this one should be entertaining, if not enlightening. We've got a great panel together. We're going to talk a little bit about SDN, network programmability, those kinds of things. Really, you know, we've got some folks with some strong opinions, some good experience in the topic, so we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about some of our perspectives and where we see things going, kind of cut through some of the hype and get some of those unicorns reined in. But primarily, you know, the reason we do this is to get your questions answered. So please, either through the Q&A panel or through Twitter, use the VertSim hashtag. Start those questions coming in, and we'll start doing our best to knock them down. So let's get the panel introduced. So everyone's going to introduce themselves, Twitter handle, where you can find them online, what they do if they want to, and maybe a quick opening statement on their views around SDN and programmability. So, Brad, let's start with you.
Sure. Brad Casemore, and my Twitter handle is easy enough. It's Brad Casemore on Twitter, and I have a blog called Twilight in the Valley of the Nerds. Also do some consulting. With regard to SDN and network programmability, I think the battle lines have been drawn. Of course, in any market, you've got two principal actors. You've got the you obviously have the sellers, and you have the buyers. And on the seller side, you have, you know, the ONF version of SDN that is, I think, is pretty well defined on the ONF website and Wikipedia and elsewhere. And then you have what you know, vendors such as Cisco and other traditional network vendors have offered as some would say a response in terms of network programmability and their own ideas about how to get that done. And I think the interesting thing right now is, how do the buyers feel about the messages that have been conveyed and their applicability for their real-world networks and applications? And I'm interested in the interaction today, and hopefully we can answer some questions and have some fun while doing it.
Brent?
Hey, this is Brent Salisbury with University of Kentucky. Obviously, OpenFlow and SDN kind of started out of R&E. So research and education. So we've got some vested interest in it there. It's important that education, higher ed vertical is really starting to drive this dialogue. I think it's been a while since just SDN in general is opening up a lot of new possibilities, virtualization in a much different fashion than we've been used to, value that comes out of it.
Thanks, Brent. How about you, Greg?
Hi, so I'm Greg Farrow. You probably know me through my loudmouth comments on my podcast at packetpushers.net and also on my blog at etherealmind.com. And you can also find me on the Twitter as at etherealmind, of course. I guess my view on SDN's changing over the last year and a half that we've been talking about it through the packet pushes is that we started off looking at OpenFlow and what happened right down in the networking layer, and we've sort of seen the vendors begin to adopt that, and Cisco's recent announcement sort of say we've got OpenFlow, we've got the networking device functionality, and along the lines of what Brad said, the question is, what are we going to do with that functionality now? How is that going to come to market, and what are we going to use it for? How can we make that do something different in the network? And then so that's my first thing, is now that we've got this tool, now we've got this special hammer that allows us to bang square nails into round holes, how do we make the most of that? And then the second part of it will be, how is the IT management going to cope with SDN? We are demanding network managers and business managers to take new steps to change the way they work and the way they manage their people, because our technology is going to change the way management works. And there's also some questions in my mind about, can we change management to do new things?
Thanks, Greg. Stephen?
This is Stephen, Stephen Foskett. I write at blog.foskett.net, and you can see me at on Twitter, on the Twitter, as Mr. Farrow says, at Foskett. And, you know, I come at it a little bit differently. I'm not a networking guy, though I did start my career that way. I, you know, focus more on storage and server virtualization. And, you know, like everybody's saying, it's time for this technology to get real. So we have to think about how are we going to have a product and a solution instead of just some cool ideas. And also I'm looking at it as well, especially on the virtualization and server virtualization support angle. In other words, how does SDN fit with server virtualization and mobility of virtual machines and things like that? So that's really where I'm coming at it. And right now I think the answer is, well, we'll see where that goes.
And our final panelist is Ivan. Ivan, are you with us? He's having some video challenges, or some audio challenges.
Yeah, I hope I'm with you. I hope you can hear me, because yes, I sort of can't hear you every now and then. Okay. So I'm Ivan Pipelniak. I'm at iOS Hints, or you can follow me on blog.ioshints.info. And I'm usually the grumpy man who tells other people what won't work. And the problem I see with SDN is that it's been way overpromised and overhyped, but we all know that. And now I'm really glad to see that some vendors are getting out of the hype mode and delivering real value to the customers. And definitely Cisco's 1PK effort is going in the right direction. So I'm so glad to see that finally we will be able to program Cisco routers beyond CLI. And I hope to see that coming out really soon.
Cool. Thanks, Yvonne. And I'm glad you can join us. So let me get the ball rolling. So SDN programmability in the enterprise. What do you think we need to do? So certainly we see a lot of traction with service providers. We see a lot of traction in research and university environments because they have some obvious use cases that present themselves. At least from my perspective, don't necessarily see things that way in the enterprise yet. I see from customers I talk to, I see interest. They're kind of curious. Not necessarily the quote-unquote killer app. I'd like to see from the rest of the panel, agree with that, disagree with that, and what do you think needs to happen for this stuff to catch fire in the enterprise, or even if it is apps, something you'd like to take issue with. Oops.
I'll take a stab at that, Omar, since my bread and butter is traditionally enterprise. So if you look at a typical enterprise, right, so Apple substrate that's, at best, in an area, everybody's sending state to one another and know a little bit about what's going on. It's more above than that, but the problem that I see. So I haven't had a great post a couple days ago. It was on NetConf. What can we not do with NetConf that we can do with SDN? So I think that's absolutely the right question. I'd love to hear everybody's opinion on that, but it's the management play that I'm absolutely looking for. So we started out in the wireless market 5 years ago, distributed thousands of APs. We manage each AP by itself. And now we collapse that into a centralized controller. And now I've got, you know, we have two or three people that manage 5,000 access points. How do we get that from an OAM perspective, not the certified OAM, but the operation administration management, into our gear to be able to have this, you know, global view at it all? And that global view is going to be obviously be powerful and transcends into some of the application awareness.
So I think the primary play is, I'll start from a management, simplified management operations automation perspective.
Yeah, and so security is obviously another great one, right? So we're exposing flows. Today we watch the edge of our networks, and we spend lots of money to watch hundreds of thousands of flows per minute. The ability to expose that across the whole access layer and actually do something with it, not just see it, but actually act on particular tuples if you wanted to. So you know, basically an access list, let's say, I want to match on, you know, so it's match action. I think I'd wind up explaining SDN to a lot of people. It's just a five-screen long access list. So the multi-tenancy and that sort of thing. So MTLS is starting to drive into enterprises these days pretty heavily. So it could be, there is some barrier, a knowledge barrier getting into that. So SDN is something that may, through abstraction, simplify that some to an enterprise.
Guys, any other thoughts on life in the enterprise?
Yeah. Well, Brent made an absolutely crucial point there. The problem we have today is that the abstractions are not ready. Because everyone is talking about OpenFlow. OpenFlow, and someone said once OpenFlow is like the x86 instruction set. So it's a very low-level mechanism that allows you to directly program the TCAM in the router, switch, access point, whatever it is. What I would like to do is I would like to download an access list. So in the analogy of OpenFlow is like an x86 instruction set, what I would really like to do is I would like to write a Perl script. And there are a lot of layers missing in between. And there are people coming out with all these different controllers, and these controllers are like the low-level operating systems. We still have a few layers missing. And that's what I think is bothering everyone in the enterprise. We are just not willing to deal with the low-level details. We don't want to go that deep into the technicalities. We want to have a tool, an API, a whatever. It will allow us to automate our processes. And I'm hoping that 1PK is something along those lines, but obviously before I can see the documentation, I won't be able to answer that question.
So I guess a question from you, you know, we talked about this x86 instruction set started to life up as a programming macro, which is the machine language for VAXs. So even if you look at the x86 instruction set, I'm not sure, and it's been a while since it's been 2 decades since I've been a developer. You know, it seems to me the move is to abstract further and further away from the machine code, right? If you look at what folks are programming now, there's not a whole lot of machine code programmers out there.
Right.
So do we see things like OpenFlow, this low-level x86 instruction set like language being great, but primarily for a small community of folks that will then turn around tools that other folks, I mean, we went through this first generation, second generation, third generation of programming languages kind of evolution over 20 years or so. Do we see the same sorts of things evolving now where this would be great, this will be for the folks that want to do science projects and, you know, the folks that are really, you know, really into this and highly skilled, but for the unwashed masses, you know, there needs to be a second or third generation of this stuff before it'll take off?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. So what you're doing is, for example, at Cisco Live, and for those of you who followed the packet pushes through the Cisco Live recordings and our previous discussions around Cisco's SDN and the 1PK strategy, is interesting in that it sort of shows that there's going to be a way forward where the low-level abstractions that we use to configure the network haven't been thought out. So OpenFlow, as you say, is like an x86 instruction set, because you're actually loading a flow entry directly into the TCAM or directly into the FIB of a device. But how do you determine the FIB? How do you determine what flow entries are going to be loaded down? Well, there's a whole, you know, that's like saying Microsoft Word is going to print letters on the page. and all I've got is in a routine that prints one letter to a page, but you've got this whole layout. How do you decide what layout, what size, what font? And that's the questions of OpenFlow that are still being worked on today. Cisco's announced, of course, through their OnePK, which is their one platform kit, a set of APIs, largely an XML set of APIs, which are being exposed so that people can use software to program them. So through the OnePK, you can actually inject an application root. So I remember speaking with Rick Pruce in the podcast that we've got recorded at Packet Pushers if you want to hear more. But you can literally go into iOS and via an XML API add an A root in the same way that OSPF allows you to add an O root and BGP allows you to add a B root and so on. You know, I for IBGP and E for EBGP and all those types of things. The OnePK will allow you to add a root, which is an A root, application root. And once it's an A root, you can then redistribute that into your routing protocols. So you now have a way of bringing SDN into your existing networks. The API set actually comes in, and I'm looking here at some presentations from Cisco Live, where the API server sets include things like interface policy, forwarding policy, flow action policy. So that means things like access lists, control lists. There are abstractions for routing change events, protocol change, you can actually query the RIB table. And there's a whole bunch of these things that you could go through, management extensions, service discovery, topology discovery APIs. And that's going to be a way to enable your existing network to work with SDN-type functions. That is, you can have this software layer at the top. It can query your network via an XML API and start to do stuff with it. OpenFlow is very powerful, and in the way that we've talked about it up until now, it's enabling, it's a universal method, a universal access method. So SDN's going to let us do some things that we don't. SDN's more than just OpenFlow, I think. It's also configuration management. Mm-hmm. And then, as Brent says, it's also about network management. It gives you the ability to do asset management via a new interface and stuff like that as well. Is that?
Yeah. I think that's a good point that, you know, SDN is, OpenFlow is obviously the protocol that that allows, you know, at least in the classic interpretation of SDN, or the classic, the current definition that's offered by the ONF, it's a means to, you know, basically have separation between a controller and obviously the forwarding plane on a switch. But there's a lot more going on at the higher layers with SDN. There's you know, how the controller deals with applications, and there's management above that, and then there's the whole, you know, cloud software stacks that, and how they tie into it. So it's a big picture. It's more of a model than a discussion of one protocol. And a lot of the focus has been on OpenFlow. But OpenFlow itself is evolving, and I'm sure, you know, a lot of us have followed a lot of papers from the academic community and the vendor community, and this is very much a moving target. And I think even there we'll see considerable progress and advancement. And it isn't a static picture; it's a very dynamic picture.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that makes it very cool and very difficult at the same time, right? There's a lot of potential with OpenFlow. I mean, I'm a huge fan of SDN and its potential for IT in general. I think the hard thing right now is we're like on step one of 50 steps, and it's still very early in the evolution. Even if you look at just where OpenFlow is versus where ONF wants to take it, it's very early in the process. And it's not just OpenFlow, right? If you look at, you know, there's Forces and there's PC and there's other, you know, there'll be other technologies which hopefully the market will evolve in a complementary manner around some of this stuff to help mature, you know, capabilities and ease of access.
Well, would you say, I mean, it really feels like it's just proper abstraction being in place. So we've just been negligent for whatever reason, whether it's networks are vital and we can't change them, there is no experimentation. So, I mean, the fact that when I hit enter, I hold my breath is ridiculous, right? So if I'm not, there's no way for me to truly model out a change. So abstracting in the software now allows me all the tools, you know, these billion and billion dollar in the tool industry of software. You know, somebody on here, I think it was Greg, that said, you know, we have Ping, we have Traceroute. I mean, those are our tools. This is a 20-year industry, and we're sitting here with tools like that. And to develop tools along with those tools to be able to have be agnostic to the substrate, you know, and have that interoperability and avoid vendor lock and all the economic, you know, principles behind it.
Brent, the problem as I see it is that we could have those tools 20 years ago. And yes, we would. The programmers would have to program them for every individual vendor, but in the same way, they have built a lot of MIB browsers or MIB monitoring tools for individual vendors. So every network management product has support for Cisco MIBs, for Juniper MIBs, for HP MIBs, for whatever MIBs. The problem is that we can't build those tools because there is no standard way of building networks. No two networks are the same. So it's impossible to build the tools that will automate provisioning of something in the network unless you heavily customize the tool to your specific network. So I think we have to go one step back and say, are we willing to standardize on how we build networks?
And is it doable with protocols, I guess? Scott Shanker's got an amazing talk where it was the history of protocols. Are we really entertaining? Obviously, the distributed nature of the internet and networks, that's always going to be there to some degree. But when you're inside your autonomous area or your administrative domain, do you need to adhere to those? Or do you just throw it all out the window and say, this is software? Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That seems like a cop-out to me in a couple of things. I guess the one thing that drives me a little nuts about the discussion is this magical view that software's, you know, the problems we're going to have in hardware we're not going to see in software. You know, as an end user, despite all these, you know, development tools, IDEs, all this stuff out there, I still see buggy software running on my Mac. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, we'll end up trading one set of problems for a different set of problems. They might be, you know, they might be more manageable, but I don't think stuff will magically go away. The whole death of protocols conversation also drives me a little bit nuts, right? I mean, it seems like we're just trading a set of protocols for a different set of protocols. I do not necessarily see saying, oh, we don't need protocols anymore. We might be, we might be further abstracting them, but if you fundamentally look at what a protocol accomplishes functionally within a network, that's not going away. Right, you know, if we need to program TCAM tables, whether you're using Spanning Tree or using OpenFlow, the fundamental functions are the fundamental functions of networking. You know, how you choose to dress that up, you know, it's going to be one six or one half dozen the other, I think, at the end of the day. I think it's a little disingenuous to say, you know, protocols are dead.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see SDN revolutionize the entire networking industry overnight. I think there's too much equipment in place, there's too much around for it to just suddenly, you know, let's take our entire data center, throw it out, put an SDN in with an OpenFlow controller and do that. I don't think anybody, while I'm very attracted to that idea, because I don't think that data center networking, you know, we're still deploying things like OSPF in the data center network for layer 3 routing, and it can do, you know, sub-second routing only when it's carefully managed and configured and extensively hand-customized. And that that's not automation. That's just sheer dint of hard work. And it's also very brittle. So using and protocols like Spanning Tree, although they're fine once they're well configured and there's lots of strong discipline for design and implementation, we still don't have the confidence that Spanning Tree is elastic. It doesn't sanity check. It doesn't say, oh, hang on, you're plugging that switch in there. That's really dumb because, you know, that's inherent, in the arc, you know, the protocols that we chose 20 years ago, 30 years ago are autonomous and they should work without any particular, you know, that's the limitation of the beast. So I think SDN is going to be very big in the data center, where we already have networking challenges, which we probably aren't You know, protocols like Trill are going to make a difference. MLAG, you know, the Cisco VPC, layer 2 multipathing technologies are all going to help. But I don't think they address the fundamental challenge about complexity and dynamic nature. I think the only way that, and up until now, historically, networking has always been self-separated. So very differently, networking was here, and then there was a chunk, and then there were servers. And servers and operating systems went together. And then above that was the applications. And the network, the servers, the applications didn't change. Like when I first started off, you know, 15 years ago, you'd put a server in, and it would sit there for 3 years before it got patched. Because it wasn't connected to the internet, of course. That was a long time ago, perhaps. But today we have a situation where Microsoft servers need to be rebooted once a month to apply the latest patches, just to keep them, you know, running reliably and safe. Yeah. So, we've got new requirements on the network that I don't think can be addressed by hand managed. I think the WAN is stable. So if we look at the WANs that we have today, like the last half a dozen companies I've worked for, WANs of 3,000 nodes, those WANs are stable, they're working, the QoS is okay, the failover is okay, the MPLS circuits, you know, with the OSPF for the internal convergence, that all seems to be working fine. I don't think we need to reinvent that wheel yet. But data centers is one, and the campus LAN, where you're running big campus LANs with thousands of devices, are two that need answers. Like, Brent, that's the problem you're saying. You're telling me you've got 5,000 wireless access points. How do you configure 5,000 devices? You sure can't do that by hand.
I'm certainly not saying we should throw the baby out with the bathwater. Obviously, it's a hybrid approach to any of it. I just think there are some cases where, MPLS works great. Unfortunately, I can't. Not all hardware supports it. So if there are other tools that I can use to augment that, especially in the layer 2 domain in an enterprise, that would help.
So it sounds like we're back to Brent's original point 20 minutes ago, which is, you know, a lot of the value is more intelligent networking. You know, the ability to roll full business policy into the operational policy in the way things are handled. As Greg, as you said, you know, have the software push back and say, hey, that's a really stupid thing. Do you really want to do that? That's where a lot of the value is. Is that fair?
Yeah, but yet again, Omar, Greg made a very good example with that OSPF thing.
Uh-huh.
I mean, why do we have so many options in OSPF? Why do we have to configure all that? I mean, in a data center, wouldn't it be ideal if you could just fire up a switch and it would use LLDP or CDP to figure out who the other switches are and then just configure its loopback interface and configure OSPF and start running?
I thought it was just to make the CCI test harder for everyone. But okay.
Yeah. No, yes, that's it. The answer is that every single engineer wants to have his data center configured differently. That's why we have so many knobs, because people are asking for them. And if someone who buys a few million dollars worth of boxes is asking for a knob, he gets a knob. And that will not change. We will just remove the knobs from the physical devices and we'll move those same knobs into the controllers. Because the same people will ask for the same set of knobs in the controllers because they want to play with the knobs.
Yep.
Sorry.
But different number. I mean...
We'll not change anything. We'll just add a layer of abstraction. The problem is that we can't agree on how to design a well-running network.
Well,
everyone has his own opinion.
Nor should we, right? I mean, I started off life as an SE a few years ago. And the reality is every network's different. Every customer has different requirements. They have different priorities of how they balance performance and risk and those kinds of things. So, I think if your strategy shepherds, is trying to shepherd everyone into having a homogenous view, it's doomed to failure. That's why we have, as you say, different knobs because different folks need to do different things.
Yeah, if we agree that that's what we need, then the SDN and the OpenFlow controller will not solve anything. We will just move the problem into another piece of software.
I think this is where we get into a discussion about when we talk about what do we mean? In other words, I think there are various markets where the trade-offs make more sense. And,
sure.
You know, it I'm sure it isn't just happenstance that, you know, the board members of the Open Networking Foundation are, you know, the major cloud service providers in the world. They had a very specific set of problems, and they felt that the trade-off made sense for them. I think the big question in the real world going forward is, to what extent does that same trade-off make sense in enterprises? And what needs to happen if it is to make sense? Or doesn't it, or perhaps it doesn't make sense in many cases. And they're going to look for, you know, the types of advancements and capabilities that that Cisco has brought forward with its 1PK and other vendors are bringing forward as well. So, you know, that's the big question. I think, Ivan, it's not a question. It sounds like you're trying to say, well, it's equivalence. There's going to be complexity somewhere. And I agree with you. But for some people, the trade-offs of SDN, as propounded by ONF, make sense. And for others, it won't make sense. And what we're trying to figure out now is, how is that going to shake out?
Yeah, and I mean, there's some interesting there's some really interesting ideas here. So if we have an SDN platform at the top, what sort of algorithm are we going to use to calculate a path through a network? And how are we going to get metrics to calculate that path? So, for example, consider that you might have a data center network with 50 switches all connected together at some sort of full mesh or some partial mesh, which is approximating a full mesh. And you have two servers wanting to communicate. Let's just keep it simple. Mac to Mac, so Ethernet communication between the two. How are you going to calculate a path through that network to determine the shortest path? Or how are you going to determine all of the equal paths? How are you going to then express that path to the network operator so that you can be confident that you know the path through the network? And so, you know, what are we going to use protocols like OSPF as an industry? So this is where SDN hasn't got the answers yet because it's still too early in the cycle. And this is where, you know, as Omar said, he said it's not going, the world's not going to change because all these things haven't been answered. So there are there's a standard going around called PCEP, which is the Path Computation Something Protocol. I don't know what the E stands for.
Element, I think.
Yeah, Path Computation Element Protocol, which at this stage may actually be the algorithm that most of the SDN vendors appear to sort of want to use as a method for calculating paths through an arbitrary design. Is that correct, or am I on the wrong track there?
I think you are. I think you bring up an interesting point. So a lot of the value I see is answering that question, but maybe answering with, at the end of the day, you still use very network-centric examples, right? So I think if I'm a controller developer of some sort, I think one of the more interesting things you can do is find paths that are optimized on non-traditional networking metrics, things like, you know, video quality or cost or those kinds of things, and be able to optimize my traffic based on things we've never been able to look at before because there's never really been any linkage between the low-level packet forwarding activity and higher-level business functions or business requirements.
Yeah.
So it's like defining best. You know, best, you know, for a network engineer means certain things. Best for, you know, a videographer or the finance guy or the compliance officer might mean something completely different. I think this is where, you know, SDN and OpenFlow and all these things get interesting, is not necessarily trying to reinvent the wheel, but really being able to do net new things that, you know, they've never been in the realm of possibility before.
Yeah,
that's a good point. It's not just markets in terms of enterprise versus service provider versus academic, you know, research. It's also, you know, how is the network being used and by whom? It's a very good point.
And Craig really brought up a great point. You know, PC, Alto, you know, whatever. There'll obviously be competing standards there. It'll probably shape down to a couple. But it's that discovery component that's probably one of the the two biggest challenges I see are synchronization between controllers and maintaining all the states. When we build data centers today, we worry about a database going across, you know, a WAN, and how does that database stay synchronized? These are problems we're going to probably have to start thinking of in the future, unfortunately. So that discovery mechanism, so if you have a CDN, you want to be able to prioritize or do whatever you want with that CDN, peel it off in a particular direction. So, I mean, if you watch the IETF draft submission, and that's the only way you can stay on top of this right now, I think, because everybody's putting, I mean, every day there's a new one going in. Cisco's very bullish on it. They've just put in, I saw MPLS TP draft out of Jam Medved, so it's really good to see that going under OpenFlow 1.3.
To some degree, I think we pulled the pin and thrown the hand grenade. The thing is not necessarily all that clear how the technology is going to evolve. You know, certainly there's some early horses, folks like OpenStack and OpenFlow. But, you know, old technologies don't die very easily in networking, and that's certainly a double-edged sword. And, you know, I certainly see a lot of conversations about taking older, you know, existing technologies that are proven and understood and repurposing them on the fly. So we'll be kind of curious to see how some of this stuff unfolds, especially as some of the more established standards bodies start to pay, you know, starting to pay greater attention to
But that's historical, right? The reason that networking equipment isn't being replaced is because the networking industry hasn't been dynamic. So in the last decade, we've introduced very few new features. And so IT management expectations have been set to say that networking equipment only gets replaced once every 7.34 years. And I think, but it's quite acceptable for servers to be ditched every 2.5 years. So as soon as they get to 2.5 years, Intel's released a new CPU. It can do twice as much for half as much. And so we throw that one out at 3 years and get a fresh one. And there's a consistent rotation. Storage arrays are the same. People are constantly rotating out their storage arrays. I mean, people sit there and say, well, my storage arrays run forever. It hasn't. There's one storage array in the corner which is used for certain things, and then there's another storage array right next to it which is only 1 year old.
But I think it's a people thing. It's not a technology thing. You know, I think at the end of the day, if you go to the typical overworked network engineer and tell them, hey, you get two options. You either learn something brand new or something, you know, learn an extension to something that you already know, they're always going to go for the latter, right? I mean, Ethernet's the best example of that. You know, the Ethernet that runs today looks nothing like the, you know, 10 meg shared Ethernet that was around when, you know, I cut my teeth. But we still call it Ethernet, and I firmly believe part of the reason Ethernet wins, you know, consistently wins is just because it seems like it's the same thing. So it's less daunting and it's less challenging to introduce into an environment. Oh, it's Ethernet. I know Ethernet. Oh, cool. I'll go that way.
Well, Omar, wouldn't that be the same thing that, so when systems administrators said, okay, we're gonna start virtualizing your big iron and we're gonna move you into a hypervisor.
Mm-hmm.
They freaked out. We're all gonna lose our jobs. There's many more systems administrators than there are now, and I've just had a personal conversation with people on SDN. It's less going to take away my job. Not at all. It should be enabling us to focus on the important thing, which is policy application. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. And I'm not disagreeing with anything you said. I think the companies that are successful will understand, the consultants, whoever's successful with this, will understand the human dynamic as much as the technology dynamic. One of the hardest lessons I learned as an SE was, you know, it's not always the technology that will win you the deal. It's how you handle the soft side of it as much as anything else. And if you go in there and you scare I made a mint selling SNA to IP migration. But part of the trick was figuring out how to tee that up so you don't scare the hell out of the decision maker and, you know, have them figure out, you know, think they're going to lose their job if they, you know, sign off on your proposal.
No, I think that's a great point, and that element is often underestimated in the industry. We think, a new technology idea is going to sweep all before it, and of course, you know, the human element, you know, the emotions and concerns of individuals who actually have to buy and implement this stuff often aren't considered, or at least considered enough, and it happens all the time, and it happens repeatedly.
and it cuts both ways, right? I mean, they can be positive and they can be negative. I mean, so, you know, even, you know, if it came up with STP, you know, STP plus, you know, super plus, and it could be the best layer 2 protocol in the world, no one's going to go near it just because it's got, you know, it's got STP hanging around its neck.
Yep.
I think with, you know, Ethernet on the positive side. So it'll be, you know, I think the who wins piece, I don't think it's not necessarily going to be the technology as much as what the adoption looks like and what the, you know, whoever delivers the least threatening and the simplest adoption. I think those things, those are kind of like the dark horse of the sleepers in this whole conversation.
Yeah. And actually that's a really good point that you have about, adoption is how exactly are we going to get to a point where we have sort of an application, a killer application that makes people say, you know, I want to run out and I want to do this. Is that going to happen? When is that going to happen? And, you know, what is that application going to be? As, you know, as we've heard, you know, this stuff was designed for service providers. It works great if you're going to really control your whole network. But, you know, I'm hearing a lot of concern over what value does this have for mainstream customers. And honestly, should mainstream customers even be worrying and thinking about SDN right now, or is this an enabler, like the instruction set analogy, is this an enabler of things in the future that they will enjoy?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And Brad, didn't you bring something like this up in one of your blogs about, you know,
I think a big difference is, and forgive me if I simplify on this, guys. You know, you can jump in, obviously.
We're simple folks, so it's probably...
I know you're all passive, and it's hard to get you going. One thing that I do see, if you look at, you know, the companies that form the directorship of the ONF, mm-hmm. is that infrastructure is their business. And they have lots of DevOps people who need to make that infrastructure work as one. And that's really what they're all about. It's their mission in life. For enterprises, that's not necessarily the case. They have a business to run, and it's quite separate from having their infrastructure necessarily function as their business. And I think that's probably a differentiator. Maybe I haven't articulated it as well as I could, but I think that's a big difference as I look at the enterprise market and I look at, you know, the principal movers behind the ONF. And I've wondered, and this is a great discussion, in terms of, you know, how transferable are the benefits that, you know, a large cloud service provider can see that they can derive from SDN compared to, you know, the daily travails of an enterprise network operator or network professional and his bosses. It's difficult to say, and it may be different from vertical market, from size of enterprise. But definitely throw that out there.
Yeah, I think that's a huge point, is the difference between running your infrastructure as a cost center and running it as a profit center. Right.
Yeah.
I came from the service provider background. You know, as long as you can show the appropriate ROI, you'll get the investment. On the enterprise side, no matter what you say, they're going to beat you back and say, cut it back, you know, cut it by 10% and come back to me tomorrow.
But that's true, but there's also a lot of appetite for change. So the fact that we are having this discussion about OpenFlow and SDN, and the fact that people are interested in it and can see that there's potential in it, expresses mm-hmm. the fact that people have an appetite for new ways of doing things. It's not, you know, we're not having a meeting in a coffee shop and there's only three people there arguing over that. Wouldn't it be great if we're actually talking about, you know, all the vendors have announced FIB management tools and exposing APIs for external sources to use because customers are asking for it because everybody can visualize solutions that can be attached to that. They may not be able to necessarily enunciate them clearly, but I think that shows that there's an appetite to consider new solutions and to implement new tools.
Yeah, but the problem I have, a lot of times with these discussions, they end up being fallow. Right? We talk about, you know, the enterprise decision makers only looking at SDN or not SDN. But at the end of the day, they don't probably give a damn. They're looking to say, you know, how do I get faster application turnup? How do I reduce costs? And it's, you know, I could do SDN, I could do private cloud, I could do public cloud. I mean, they're looking at this as an option amongst, you know, a selection of options with a specific functional outcome. I need better security, I need better compliance, I need faster turnup, I need to lower costs, I need less headcount, yeah, whatever it ends up being. They can go in a number of different directions, and it's not binary, and I think sometimes that gets lost in the discussion, certainly on the enterprise side, of what they're looking to accomplish. I mean, at the end of the day, for a lot of folks that I talk to, they want simplicity, right? If they want different functionalities, they want to be able to call up their cloud provider and say, hey, this is what I needed to do. Let me know when that's going to be available.
By the same token, we don't get electric cars without having petrol cars, without having roads first. We look today at electric cars because electric cars are clean, they're more efficient, they're going to be better overall value because they're going to be...
Stop surfing.
Well, I'm not. That's just
yeah. He's watching some kind of Cisco webinar right now, and it's hard for him to have enough.
Wow. Even he needs to borrow your Lego phone.
Yeah, well, everybody needs a Lego phone. By the way, if you're excited about the Lego phone, they are available on eBay.
And now you know why. You can reconfigure it on the fly. The original SDN telecommunications.
Exactly. So, hey, I've got a question for you guys. In terms of applications, I'm interested in server virtualization. Server virtualization demands a very dynamic network. One of the coolest things about the 1PK announcement to me was the Nexus 1000V, VXLAN, VLAN integration. The reason that was interesting to me is because it specifically meets a need that I see in terms of serving the needs of dynamic networks. There's a lot of people thinking that OpenFlow specifically and SDN generally is somehow relevant to server virtualization. My question is it, and how, and what does the future look like? Maybe that's the cross-silo application that allows us to find some way of making more dynamic networks thanks to SDN.
I think it can be. I'll give you the official Cisco spiel, right? The official Cisco guy. I mean, that's one of the reasons with our vision, we kind of broke things up into three buckets of, programmability kind of stuff. There's the API stuff, like 1PK. There's the controller stuff, like OpenFlow, that kind of stuff. And then there's overlay stuff. So I think there's a lot of potential for overlay networking and programmability in general. I think at the end of the day, it kind of depends on how much you want to, how dirty you want to get your hands, right? There's some folks, I've had customers talk to me and say, hey, can we, instead of using VXLAN, can I just, do the same thing by programming my PCAM? So, yeah, you can do that. I'm not sure you want to. I think a lot of the time the discussion is, A, can you do it? B, do you really want to? A lot of times the answer to A is yes. The answer to B, maybe not. I mean, if you got 20,000 VMs running around, I'm not sure you want to be in the position of, hand coding or trying to code TCAMs on the fly. But I think in general you'll see a lot of, if you look at programmability at a high level, and even if you look beyond the OpenFlow piece and look at things like OpenStack and being able to provision virtualized infrastructure on the fly, I think there's a lot of play there, and I think that's one of the reasons you see it taken off on the service provider side. This is because that's what they need to do, right? They have big pools of resources they need to optimize and reoptimize on the fly.
Well, and it says that the elegance of the solution is where I was on a comment back and forth on his blog the other day, and it's basically what I came away with is it makes sense to simplify as much as possible the network substrate so it fixes a lot of our kind of management problems. And then push all the wacky stuff we do into hypervisors and into software where it can be programmatically managed. I'm a big OpenStack Essex evangelist. I love it. So you guys are worth top five. I think that's the perfect direction. And I really think even when you start looking at the service provider application awareness play, it's going to be that orchestration piece, and it's going to be something there tying it all together via XML APIs, as Greg pointed out.
Yep. And I think for all our customers, we need to give them options for tiered approaches, right? I mean, with my Mac, right, I can use Xcode, I can use AppleScript, or I can just buy applications off the shelf. And I think a lot of this will look the same kind of way. If you've got the expertise and the people, you want going to dig in deeper and deeper, and use applications or use, OpenFlow and those kind of things. Other folks are just going to use applications. And I think even with the virtualization piece, you can do all this management through programmability and OpenFlow, those kind of things. You can also use things like, the orchestration tools like the ones that we have or, that other people sell that, do a lot of the same things with a lot less risk. I think the one thing that folks need to address going forward is the transfer of risk, right? And we're kind of getting to the point where we've got 10 minutes left, so I'm trying to wrap things up. I think one of the biggest challenges you see organizationally is if you buy off-the-shelf software, it's someone else's throat to choke. If you're writing your own software, you're assuming that risk of making sure it works and doing troubleshooting and those kinds of things. In some cases, it's going to be worthwhile. In others, it's not. And I think that's one of the things you talk to customers, so some of the trepidation is around, you know, that transfer of ownership. I'd like to see what folks think about that. I think in some cases you don't have a choice, right? If you need something done, the only way you're going to do it is if you hand wire it. But for other folks, you know, they're going to look at multiple options and try and figure out what makes most sense.
Yeah, and that's exactly a nice tie into what Brad was saying previously. So if I'm a service provider, I want to build my own thing.
Yep.
Because that's my secret sauce that gives me competitive advantage. If I'm an enterprise, I need a tool to get my job done. And Stephen asked a great question. Can we do a magic application that will automatically provision virtual networks and get rid of manual VLAN provisioning, for example?
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we can. I mean, we are very close.
I agree.
And if we do that, will that work cross-platform? That's my next big question, you know. Well, one of the coolest things about OpenFlow is that theoretically it would work cross-platform because maybe not everybody has all Cisco.
Well, Stephen, that's the beauty of things like VXLAN and VGRE, you name it. Because with that, you totally decouple the virtual from the physical. What the physical network has to give you is IP transport. And that can be done by any box on the market today. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, you don't care what you have in the fabric, if you wish. You just have to provide IP transport.
Yeah. And I totally agree with you. That's the only reason I think that people are willing to put up with VXLAN is because it works anywhere with anything.
Exactly.
Well,
and you don't have to provision anything in the fabric.
That's the only reason, but okay. We can debate that in 2 weeks.
I think...
that's a good idea. Let's do that. Let's talk about that in 2 weeks.
Yeah, so, well, we are scheduled to do another one of these in a couple of weeks for anybody who's listening. But one thing I'd like to say is that there's also an opportunity for companies to, and these, you know, startups, and as well as our existing vendor partners, to actually build applications that could work for the enterprise and for service providers. Now, I mean, one of the comments that you made there, Omar, was that only service providers will build their own applications. But there's also scope for startups to build applications for enterprises to do.
Sure, absolutely.
And I guess my frustration is I'm not where that. Because the enterprise is going to be a much easier problem to solve than the service provider one, because the service providers are going to have enormously onerous requirements, and it's going to take them a long time to deliver anything because they're so large and hopeless at, you know, doing anything, that they're not likely to actually move any time in the next decade on this.
But Greg, if you're an ISV right now, where do you place your bets in terms of developing for the environment?
You don't. You sit there and use your BGP and your MPLS and buy the stuff that's off the shelf, and you just keep whacking it out like you've done for the last decade.
Yeah, I don't think you have a choice. I mean, if you're a Facebook or a Yahoo or a Google, you know, you're building your own control plane and management plane. But you don't have a choice. There's nothing else out there that works. I think at the other end, if you don't have the resources, you're a small company, you don't have the resources, and you really don't have the desire to fund development, you buy off the shelf. I think in the middle, the big fat middle is where it gets interesting, where there's a blend of approaches, and you kind of figure out what makes sense. You know, I think at the end of the day, you kind of want to make sure you don't end up down to some evolutionary dead end, right? You want to end up in a position where you maintain the maximum ability to pick and choose how you approach problems.
Yeah, and I look forward to Facebook and Yahoo and Amazon being a nice prototype place for all of these technologies. And when the public cloud finally fades away into irrelevance, then private clouds will get the benefit of all their technology and all their development.
We don't have that show scheduled yet.
I think it's worth pointing out that if it wasn't for those hyperscale content and cloud providers, we wouldn't even be having this conversation, in my opinion, right?
Absolutely. I mean, those are the guys, I mean, what they're seeing, we'll see, and, you know, they're leading the charge. I mean, they're absolutely the cutting edge, but I think a lot of what they're dealing with is going to start flowing down into, you know, certainly large enterprises, you know, 4 or 5 years down the road.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll say thank you for doing that testing for me.
So any final thoughts, guys?
There was one part of Cisco's 1PK announcement which I think is worth drawing attention to very quickly, and that is that Cisco is not only exposing APIs for external SDN, they're also giving you containers that run inside of the iOS. So on platforms that have multiple CPUs, Cisco is exposing a container in which your applications can run. So an ASR 9000 can allocate a CPU to a container which can run your software. And you can write a program which runs on an iOS router. And think about that in terms of SDN, actually having an agent on the router that could run scripts or some sort of ideas.
Cool. Thanks for bringing that up.
I'll say one thing. I want to, just kind of a question to the panel, because, and this is going to sound like Kool-Aid, but literally, I'd love to hear, what is it that anybody would want to see out of Cisco at this point as far as embracing with SDN? Because I had this conversation with a lot of R&E friends, and there's a lot of skepticism there. And really, the only thing that I've come away with is time to delivery is the best thing that's been articulated. Everything else is, it's what more do you want? You guys are leading the charge. You're pushing every other vendor out there. Am I missing anything there?
We're well aware of the time to delivery piece, and we're working.
And literally, that's the only tangible that makes sense. You know, you're embracing OpenFlow on all your platforms. What more do you want as far as the decoupled control plane support?
Well, but Brent, from my perspective, it's way more important that we get access to 1PK, the API.
Right.
Because only a few people will go and fiddle the bits in TCAMs. A lot of us want to do very specific, pretty high-level things. So yes, it's nice to have OpenFlow support in whatever platform, Nexus 3000, whatever it is. That's great. What I really want to have is I want to get my hands on 1PK API. That's what matters to me.
And when I say OpenFlow support, I'm just based on the embrace of the ONF decoupled definition. I'm making the assumption, hopefully not wrong, that that also includes OpenFlow there, because you're dead on. You're absolutely right, Ivan. And the only other thing is Brad made a killer point the other day, and it was, this is merely evolution. This isn't reinvention. We might be taking a couple steps back, and we're going to fiddle around with hardware for a little while, and we're going to have to understand a couple of these, you know, some of the nuances there. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's just evolutionary. And the software component and the flexibility that's there to build applications, is it brings it into that layering. I think that's going to be important for us. I know that we can't efficiently manage exponential growth at a linear cost.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge point. Yeah, I think to go back to what the killer app might be is, I think the data centers are run at the point now where you can't afford to have people inserted into the day-to-day process from a cost perspective, from a time perspective, or from a trying to avoid screw-ups perspective.
And yeah, I need – I think the one thing that I'd like to see is better management. I need better ownership of my devices. So as Brent said, better time to deployment, more rapid deployment cycles. But I also need better SNMP isn't giving me enough asset management capabilities. SNMP isn't giving me enough management information for, you know, I have to enable SNMP and then I have to do NetFlow and I have to implement a whole bunch of things to make network management systems. And I think part of what I'd like to envision out of the SDN is a better network management cycle where I actually go right around the ownership cycle with a proper tool. Something similar to what there are other tools around for, like Oracle or database management and things like that, that actually go from, you know, cradle to grave for the ownership cycle. And I'm not convinced that today's network management solutions are doing that. They all address one part, but they don't address the entire cycle. And that's one of the things I'm hoping out of SDN is better ownership.
And you've written about that before, Greg, so let's hope somebody comes to your rescue, because you sound pretty stressed.
You know, I think that's where the startup potential is to write some of that stuff. Because to some degree, you know, I think kind of needs a fresh approach. And I think as the capabilities of SDN across the board mature and get a little more... get richer, for lack of a better term, I think certainly there's a huge potential there for someone to step in and deliver the kind of things Greg's looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what's missing for me today is I can't get, especially with all this outsourcing that's going on. So if I turn towards my outsourcer and say, what does my network look like? And the guy goes, well, I'll have to go and get your diagram and draw it out and check what's there. If I say, well, what's the speed on this interface or what's, he goes, well, I'll have to go. And he logs into 35 different devices and charges me, you know, $1,500 a day to do that. Well, why have I not got an automated tool that presents me that information in a meaningful way?
Yeah.
Yep. I think that's why I see folks like Brent is excited about this, because, I mean, that's some of the, you know, some of the kinds of things you can do now with a single state view, to be able to, you know, start scratching at the surface of the kinds of things you're looking at. Brad, Stephen, any final thoughts? Otherwise, we'll try and keep it relatively on time.
No, I think we've covered a lot of ground today, and, you know, there are some questions that are unresolved, but, you know, you can't boil the ocean in an hour, and I'm sure we'll continue grappling with those questions independently and as a group.
You know, maybe in the quarter we'll have to do another one of these and see how the market's evolved.
Well, I hope
it'll be really interesting to see what kind of uptake 1PK has in another,
yep,
you know, 6 months or so.
So, folks, thanks to the panel for joining us. And also for the participants, thank you for coming and listening to us. Hopefully, it was enlightening and entertaining.
Thanks,
Mark.
And thanks to you guys for making this a public dialogue. I think that's really important. It says a lot about what you're doing. Thank you.
That's it for the show this week, and thanks for listening. You can always follow us on the website, on the Twitters, on Google Plus, and many other locations. We will be returning with the Cisco Virtual Symposium series. There's another one scheduled in a couple of weeks, so make sure you tune in and follow us. You can join the event live on WebEx, so keep an eye out for that. As always, remember that too much networking would never be enough.